It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 33. Let's begin with the Houses of Parliament here in the United Kingdom and Brexit. Listen to this clip from a film about another era in the Houses of Parliament where one of my heroes, Oliver Cromwell, came in and had this to say.
Gentlemen, an immovable Parliament is more obnoxious than an immovable king. They're drunkards, tricksters, villains, whoremasters, godless, self-seeking, ambitious tricksters. You are no more capable of conducting the affairs of this nation than you are of running a brothel.
You are
scum, sir. And a truly elected scum at that. This is no parliament. I shall put an end to your sitting. I hereby declare this parliament dissolved. Colonel Harrison!
Yes, sir.
Well, I know that there are faults you could find with Cromwell, and I know that there's not going to be a Cromwell come in and deal with our politicians, but, you know, sometimes I wish there would be. This whole scenario is such a debacle in so many different ways. Bottom line is, we have the people in the United Kingdom overall voted to leave the European Union. The European Union, as far as it's concerned, you can't get out of, and so they've made it as difficult as possible. That's been made easier for them because out of 650 MPs, although two-thirds of the constituencies voted to leave the European Union, 500 out of 650 want to stay in. And they've been trying to find some way to get around that. And that has resulted because of weak leadership. We certainly need strong leadership. It's resulted in the mess that we're in at the moment. Personally, I think still the most likely result is that some form of Mrs. May's deal will get through. We are now left with a choice of a bad deal, which is hers, or an even worse deal, which is staying in the EU. The behaviour of almost all of our politicians has been absolutely despicable and pathetic. And we just long for some kind of leadership, even a Cromwell. I listened to a fascinating program called The Moral Maze, which was discussing the question of whether you were aware of an artist having done something, would you therefore watch their paintings, buy their books, listen to their songs? And this is particularly true in the case of Michael Jackson. The two-part documentary on Channel 4, Finding Neverland, is really quite devastating.
Like a bit of a shock to the system. That performance, that meet and greet, were such dreamlike experiences. This little Australian boy who had had this otherworldly, impossible experience of having this meeting with my idol and my mentor and my God, and like I'd been anointed, you know, some kind of way.
Now let me put a caveat in here. Just as with Cardinal Pell, just as with anybody, whether I like them or not is irrelevant. We should not have trial by media. But if these documentaries are true, and the Jackson estate, I think, are suing for $100 million to try and suppress them, I think the thought of someone like Michael Jackson using his power and his influence and his wealth to sexually abuse young children is... I don't want to endorse that. And you know, every time we listen on the radio or buy one of his records, then there's a sense in which I'm rewarding that. So I guess the answer for me would be, no, I can't. Now, I realize there are problems with that. Are you going to demand, you're not going to listen to anyone then, because there's, you know, nobody's pure in that sense. However, you know, there are limits. I think there are boundaries. And I think this is most certainly one of them. In that same regard, I was utterly horrified to hear this week of Lord Steele, David Steele, the man who's infamous for introducing the 1967 Abortion Act into Britain, and has therefore been responsible for the death, at least partially responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of children. But he was told, he admitted this week, that he had been told by one of his leading colleagues, politician again, the MP Cyril Smith, that Smith had admitted he was guilty of child sexual abuse. And Lord Steele did nothing about it and said nothing about it. Again, it's the rich, it's the powerful, living by one standard whilst making our standards. And let's keep you up to date with the transmania that's going on as well. Now we're on to gymnastics. Female gymnasts of all ages at thousands of British clubs must now use the same changing facilities and toilets as males who identify as female, following a ruling by the sport's governing body. Women and girls travelling to official competitions have also been told they must share accommodation with boys and men who identify as female. And this is the horrendous part. British gymnastics have banned coaches from telling parents their daughter is sharing a room with a boy who has declared himself as female. Those who are unhappy with the new rules must make their own alternative arrangements. And understandably, of course, there's been a furious backlash from parents. And yet this is what is going on now. It's even worse than this. British gymnastics have also changed the strict dress code rules that have been in place for a long time to allow boys who identify as girls to wear shorts or tights during competitions. Until now, all female gymnasts had to wear leotards when competing. But if boys who say that they're girls were made to wear leotards, it would be immediately obvious that they weren't girls. So, they've said they've changed their dress code for that. Somebody wrote me from the island of Lewis, which is, in one sense, considered to be a very conservative area. One parent said that their child, a teenage child, had been told that transgender is perfectly normal and should never be questioned. A second parent said that their child had been in a guidance class and had been told by the teacher there are 73 different genders. Sorry, I'm laughing. Why am I laughing? It's absolutely, it's pathetic that somebody who's university educated, who's intelligent, who's a teacher, can actually say something like that and teach children that. When one of the pupils in that class then said that there were only two genders, they were laughed at by many of the rest of the class. This is the madness we're in. Where is this going to end? Well, according to Amanda Spellman, who is the director of Ofsted, the school's inspectorate, this is all perfectly fine. In a fascinating interview she did on the Sunday programme on BBC Radio 4 this weekend, she spoke about the fuss that's occurred in the Muslim school in Birmingham, where such has been the objection from parents that they've had to withdraw the relationship education, inverted commas, about LGBT.
What's your reaction, first of all, when you see parents protesting outside of school, withdrawing their children from classes sometimes, refusing to attend certain lessons?
The first thing is, is to think how deeply distressing this must be for the children at the school. What an extraordinary thing to see this kind of contention and unhappiness at the gates of your own school, somewhere that you think of as somewhere safe, enjoyable, calm. And I think it reflects the difficulty that we have talking about this subject sort of calmly, carefully, in a way that helps people take things forward. When agitators, when big national campaign groups get involved, it generally doesn't lead to that kind of conversation.
There's a bit of squaring of a circle to be done here.
Now, what struck me in that interview was particularly this, is the dishonesty of Ms. Spellman, who's claiming to be kind of an honest broker. And here's something I think that's very important for people to grasp. She admitted that we're not talking about sex education anymore, that actually what we're talking about is relationship education. And whereas sex education is taught in secondary school primarily, relationship education we taught from nursery. I think that's a key point for you to understand. This is a Trojan horse. I mean, relationship education sounds great, how to have good relationships with people. But under this guise, they are imposing a doctrine and a philosophy, notably queer theory, which is anathema to Christianity and to Islam and to others, but it's actually also incredibly harmful to humanity and to all human beings. So beware of that. Also beware of what Miss Spellman said when she said, or Spielman, I think it is, when she said that there were groups from outside getting involved. Indeed, there are. I don't think she was referring to these groups. I don't think she was referring to Stonewall or to TIE or to other LGBT groups. I think she's basically talking about groups like the Christian Institute or Islamic groups or other who are involved. So she's quite happy to work with Stonewall, but not with others. There is a bias and a prejudice against biblical Christianity in our state education system. And that has phenomenal implications for the future, I think. Talking about bias, here's a wee thing for you that you may not consider all that important, but I think the Herald newspaper, it used to be known as the Glasgow Herald, is one of the oldest newspapers in the world. I believe it started in 1783. Well, they have just announced that they're going to stop doing editorials. Now, editorials in a newspaper, as you know, occur when the editor writes an opinion piece. Why have the Herald stopped doing it? Well, on one hand, they'll say things like, well, it's because we allow people to make up their own mind. No, I'm telling you, this is why they've stopped. Because the Herald, like many newspapers, now does very little actual journalism and reporting of news. It's extremely hard to distinguish between op-ed columns and their news columns. Increasingly, our newspapers, with one or two honourable exceptions, are becoming proponents of one particular philosophy or one particular political view, and they just don't do reporting. There are less and less journalists and more columnists, and that is not good for finding out truth within our culture. There's a fascinating article in the Christian Post on the Chinese government vowing to get rid Christianity of Western influence. And we'll put a link to that on the blog. There are some chilling quotes. One more Christian, one less Chinese. For individual black sheep who under the banner of Christianity participate in subverting national security, we firmly support the country to bring them to justice. Now, I have a little bit of sympathy with this because I think that they perceive Christianity as a Western religion, as having come in from the West, and they see it as a threat. And where my sympathy lies is when Christianity is put across as something Western, which it is not. This was a fascinating quote as well in the article. There are outlines that the new Bible should not look Westernized and should look Chinese and reflect Chinese ethics of Confucianism and socialism. Again, I have a little bit of sympathy in this because I think that what you'll find in Western culture is how often we take the Bible and adapt it to our values rather than the other way around. So in that sense, the Chinese are just following us. But if we are being biblical Christians, we will end up challenging the culture. And there's another very underreported story, and that is the story of the Dutch Church, Dutch Reformed Church, who had decided not to recognise same-sex unions. And then the High Court in Pretoria on Friday morning, last Friday morning, ordered the church to recognise same-sex marriages. Now, again, that's a little-known story that's not been picked up. Why is that important? It's important because we have a government, we have a law court telling the church what it must believe and what it must practice. I think what's happened in South Africa, what's happening in China, I think it's almost inevitable that unless there's some kind of renewal and revival, unless there's some kind of restoration of democracy, really, then this is also going to happen. The state is going to act as God and tell the church what we should and should not believe. Okay, let's come back from China and South Africa, and let's come back to the United Kingdom. Now, truth is truth, no matter who says it. Sometimes I wish that we would have church leaders who would either speak up or be heard in the wider cultural context and on media. But when that doesn't happen, it's great when you have someone like Brendan O'Neill, whose writings, I mean, so many things I don't agree with him, and yet he speaks so much sense. And I'm not going to comment on this. This is concerning the knife crime that we mentioned last time. I want you to listen to this clip, and to me, it's the best thing I've heard all week. Just enjoy.
I do think that the reduction of the knife crime problem to a health issue is really strange, because I think it speaks far more, in my view, to a real worrying process of social and cultural fragmentation. But I just think it's a little bit ahistorical to say that it's down to, I don't know, austerity or the closure of youth centres or the collapse of mental health services or whatever else it might be. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, our youth centre was closed and people didn't go out and stab people to death in the middle of the street. Something new is taking place. There's a real sense of nihilism in some of these attacks. And you get the impression that there are significant sections of youths in London in particular, but also other parts of the country, who just feel completely and utterly disconnected from their communities and out of control. I think one of the key problems we have to look at is the collapse of adult authority, the way in which families seem incapable now of exercising dominion over their children, the way in which schools refuse to discipline kids, the way in which strangers no longer discipline children. I mean, that used to happen to us all the time when we were kids, but you never see it now. And I think this kind of collapse of discipline, this collapse of control, means that young people feel that they are beyond reproach. So I think one of the contributing factors to this ugly crime spree is the fact that young people feel they can do anything they want. And we have to get a handle on that.
Something that's not so enjoyable is what happened to a patient in California. Now, one of my concerns is what's happening in our culture is with the dismantling of the human, we are creating systems which treat human beings pretty well like robots. And there's this dreadful story of a man in California who was told by a doctor using a robot with a video link screen that he was going to die.
Tonight, a Fremont family is outraged and saddened after a loved one was told he had hours to live, the dire news delivered via a hospital robot. The patient's granddaughter shot this video in the emergency room of a Kaiser hospital. A robot was wheeled in, and a doctor on a video screen told 79-year-old Ernest Quintana that his lungs were failing. His granddaughter is describing the encounter as, quote, horrible for me and him, saying she is scarred forever. Quintana died on Tuesday. A Kaiser spokesperson has apologized, saying the hospital will review its use of the video technology.
The lack of human contact, the misuse of technology. I just think this is emblematic of where we're going. Of course, the hospital has apologized, but the fact that someone could even think of doing that. You know, start treating people like human beings. Patients are not products, they are human beings. And I think all our corporations and institutions and society, and church actually, we need to continue to remember that. Thank the Lord that he did not come as a robot, but he became a human being incarnate. Let's go to Australia and the positive use of technology. There's a company there called Sundrop, in South Australia, in Port August, who, this is an amazing story. They produce 17,000 tons of tomatoes a year, which is 15% of Australia's produce. And they do so in this very dry area, using only water and sunlight. They don't use the earth, they don't use ground, because it's a hydroponic system. I put up a wee video on the blog just to let you see it, and I think it's utterly amazing. Because what they do is they have a million litres of water a day that they desalinate, seawater, that they desalinate using energy that comes from sun panels and a tower that they have in the middle of their plant. It's just, it's a wonderful use of technology. I think we as human beings have been made so creative that we can use these things. And we are, the Lord tells us, to subdue the earth and to use things, not to destroy it, not to pollute it, but to do what we can and the way that he has given us these abilities. And I thought that was a wonderful story. Okay, I'm going to leave you. If you want to support the podcast, then please feel free to go on to the Podbean fundraiser and do so. If you've got any feedback or ideas, please do let us know. It's good that we get responses from all over the world. I think last week, 25 different countries. But I'm going to leave you with a quote from a politician, an Australian politician. We began lamenting much of our politics. But here is Kevin Rudd, cited in God is Good for You. He says this: if we abandon God and the ethical imperatives that proceed from that, we're in danger of ending up in an amoral morass, where the sort of technocratic debates about whether certain human beings should be regarded as sharing a common humanity, like the Soviet purges of enemies of the people, or the Nazis' belief in the expendability of certain races, most particularly Jews, become possible. You then land in an amoral jungle, animated only by some mud-begotten social Darwinianism. This is because there was no longer a guiding moral authority. These regimes could reason their way to any conclusion. Without God, our politicians can reason their way to any conclusion. And our academics, and our media people. We need God. We need the Lord. Our nations need him. We need him as individuals. We need him collectively. Again, that's what we're here for. May God bless you. And I hope you have a great week. And let's continue to be in prayer for one another and for the various nations that we come from and for his church. God bless you. Bye. We are the light of the world, so shine on. We are the light of the world, so shine on. We are the light of the world, so shine on. We are the light of the world, so shine on. Hey, I thought we won the battle, but it really looks like we losing it. What we do seems insignificant, so limited in our influence. They don't listen to our message. We scream and yell it, they say it's irrelevant. It's the greatest story ever told, but the television ain't telling it. So often they just mock our faith, and it makes me wanna hide my face. Why we sitting on our hands with no plans, like we got time to waste? The culture could change if someone stepped up for the cause to rep us in our guard. But who will accept the job if only we had better rap?